Welcome to The Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron at www.thematthewaaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter. We're on Facebook. You go to The Matthew Aaron Show, you press search, you click like, and you will then follow us on Facebook. We are on Apple Podcasts. We are on Blog Talk Radio. And our number one place where we are found and we're getting all kinds of listens from is Spotify. So please continue listening to us on Spotify or download Spotify and give us a listen. It's free. We have 275 plus episodes for you to catch up on, over 300, 400 guests, some of your favorite actors, actresses, directors, writers, producers of all time. So once again, www.thematthewaaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter. You go to Facebook, type in The Matthew Aaron Show. You click like, you'll follow us there, get our updates there. We're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Spotify, we're on Stitcher, we're on Blog Talk Radio. But try, if you can, not going to twist your arm too bad, to follow us on Spotify. That's where we're getting the most love lately, and I'd love to keep that up. I'm a big supporter of Spotify, and the more love we get on Spotify, the better it is for our show. Thank God I'm not on. I keep forgetting, because we've been streaming WrestleManias the last three nights, me, myself, Chuck Salvatore, and Steve Weirich. Also, they've been on The Matthew Aaron Show plenty. And when you stream, your face is on there, and I've looked horrid for three nights, and there's not much you can do. It's a problem that persists. But anyways, I forget that I'm not on there, so I keep you know trying to look at myself on the computer here, and I'm like, oh wait, I'm fine, because today I'm interviewing Thomas Sadowski. Thomas, of course, famously from Life in Pieces in the Newsroom. He's a Tony Award nominated actor. He's one of the best actors today. He's still young. He's on Tommy right now on CBS. Tommy, of course, with Edie Falco, and now Thomas Sadowski. And Thomas is one of those guys where he's just enhanced everything he's been in. You know, so whether it's Tommy, which he plays Buddy Gray on that show, but with him and Edie Falco, who both bring their Broadway and dramatic acting chops to that show. I tell people, if you like that Tom Selleck show, Blue Bloods, you'll like Tommy. Life in Pieces, of course, he worked with my friend Betsy Brandt. He did comedy on that. And then, of course, The Newsroom, which is this mix of sardonic wit and comedy and drama. And, of course, he killed it on that as well. So Thomas has been nothing but a great, great actor for many, many years. And he's now really getting his shot in the spotlight on TV and film, which is well-deserved. So we're going to talk to Thomas in a few minutes. Also, I want to talk about, though, we're going to talk with him about his Broadway experiences as well. He's very much a Broadway actor. He's a Tony Award-nominated actor. He did Neil LaBute's The Way We Get By. Neil, of course, was on our show. Great, great Broadway writer. He got the Tony Award nomination for a leading actor in that show. And then I believe he ended up marrying Amanda Seyfried, his co-star from that show. So Thomas probably owes a bit of his life to The Way We Get By. He also did a show with Ben Stiller and Edie Falco, The House of Blue Leaves. And so he's already worked with Edie. We're going to talk about that. But if you're looking for, you know, a lot of conversation about film, TV, and Broadway, today's going to be your day. And we're going to make sure to talk about his acting chops and how he became an actor. I always look at this show as when I die, hopefully there's a college professor who is like, if you avoid the nonsense, Matthew Aaron's interviews can help you carve out a road for yourself to become one of these things. Because I was born in Chicago, Illinois, with no nepotism in the business, no connections in the business. I had to make my way myself, still am. But my goal has always kind of been with this show, if there is a goal, how do you further yourself in this business? How do you create a career where you can make a living and do what you love for yourself in this business? And we're going to get into that with Thomas as well. So I will be back in one moment with Thomas Sadowski, and I look forward to talking to all of you. Thomas Sadowski is going to be calling in any moment. Before we talk to Thomas, I wanted to talk to you guys about, I hope you're self-isolating. I hope you're doing your quarantine. There's a reason I'm doing all these shows for you. There's a reason I'm keeping so busy for you. I mean, I could be working on scripts. I could be working on films, and I am, but I'm splitting some of that time to do these podcasts, to do these streams for my wrestling fan audience as well, where I'm trying to encourage you to keep staying inside, entertain you, keep you a little less bored. I know some of you think this is bullshit. I know some of you want to get outside. I know some of you think it's not going to hurt to go, you know, get out there. I even feel at risk when I've walked to the market I've walked to the market twice in the last 5 days to get fruits, vegetables, chicken. And, you know, I'm a single guy, so I pick up my stuff and I can walk home with two bags, you know. I don't think I'm going to do that anymore. I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to do things right now because I feel weird even going to the store. I'm not telling you not to go to the store and get your essentials, but it's a scary time. And, you know, I've been talking about this for over a month. I knew that this was going to be scary. It's as simple as businesses that function on greed in a capitalistic society do not shut down unless their lives are at risk. So that's the only clue I needed. I knew when things were going south on Wall Street, bunker down, hunker down as well, hunker down, because this is going to be a while. And now the White House has told us it'll be another 30 days at least. So April off the books. And, you know, it's going to be longer than that. But Thomas is going to join us right now, though. Thomas, of course, is now on the show Tommy with Edie Falco. We're going to talk to Thomas about that. We're going to talk to him about our good friend Betsy Brandt. We're going to talk to him about acting. So I hope you enjoy. Here we go. Thomas.
Yo.
Yes, okay. This is Matthew Aaron. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm getting by. How do you feel? How do you feel? Like I assume you're following the isolating guidelines and you're just hanging in there.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I got to say, like, this is one situation where I'm sort of not really willing to mess around when it comes to not only, you know, the health of me and my family, but my neighbors.
Like, yeah.
I don't want to play with it. So we are definitely hunkered down and, you know, doing our best to make the most of this time. You know, there's. You know, weirdly, our industry still has a lot going on in terms of like development and pre-production stuff.
Yeah.
So, in as much as, you know, we can't go out and shoot anything anytime soon, obviously. And, you know, the theaters are all closed down, but that's not stopping creative people from being creative. And, you know, I'm doing my best to do that. And also, frankly, like, finding other places where I can use my voice and whatever platform I do have to do some good for people in this world who really need help. You know, I've been I've been keeping an eye on where I can, you know, stick resources and use my voice. And we actually just launched a fundraiser today with the charity that I'm on the board of directors with to help get soap and food and cleaning supplies to refugee families in Syria that are in the camps, because, and if this thing gets into the camps, it's going to be really, really horrifying what happens.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm just trying to find places.
What's the charity, Thomas? Service,
you know,
what's
where the, I can be.
What's the charity?
It's called Inara. Inara, I-N-A-R-A.
Okay.
And you can find out information about us at inara.org. We provide life-saving and life-changing medical treatment to refugee children who are injured as a result of conflict, as a result of war. And we're partnering with another organization to just to sort of go outside of what our normal mandate is and bring food and supplies into the camps. You know, this is a dollar in, dollar out organization. Like, we don't sit on this stuff. Everything that you send in just goes right back into service. So, you know, that's sort of where my focus is right now. How can I help while being smart about this?
And is this a thing where, you know, every dollar counts? Can people that just even have $5, $10 donate to you guys? Does that help you, or do you just need big donors?
Oh, no, not at all. What we need is people. If you got 50 cents, my wife Amanda and I, our dear friend Aya Cash, who is a great actress who was on a TV show called You're the Worst, amazing actress named Lindsay Godfrey, who is on Bold and the Beautiful, I believe. Our friend Essie Cup, who's a CNN journalist, we have all thrown down to match whatever money comes in. So,
oh, wow.
If you've got 50 cents, send us 50 cents, we'll match it. And, you know, it costs us about 80 bucks total to put together a food, you know, food, soap, and cleaning supplies kit for one of these families. And, you know, we're aiming high to be able to help over 1,000 families in Lebanon and in parts of Turkey. So, you know, look, if people want to help out, there's definitely a way to help out. A dollar goes really far in this situation. So,
great.
You know, what you would normally spend at Starbucks, you know, we can take that and actually do something really good with it.
Great. I'm getting a check this week. I will send you guys some money. I hope some other people do as well. Anything that we can do to help out, man. Wow. Okay. So, unfortunately, there's no great segue to get into your career and to get into and to get into everything going on. But you know, you're one of those guys I've been following for a long time, and part of it's because I enjoyed your work on the newsroom. Part of it's because I myself am theater trained, and you have been a great actor on Broadway. But then part of it's also you ended up working with a dear friend of mine who I've been friends with for many years, Betsy Brandt, with Life in Pieces.
Yes.
And so I got to follow you that way as well. It's funny in this business. It's a little different when you're in the business because you usually watch shows or watch movies because you now know people who've done things in them or were they recommended it to you or whatever. And so I now find I get to know actors through watching my friends work with actors. So we've been following you for a while. Now you're on Tommy, CBS All Access, if you wanted to add free. This is your second time, though, working with Edie Falco, correct?
Yeah, I actually worked with Edie on Broadway. God, I don't know. That was 10 years ago or something like that, maybe a little bit less than that. It was right before we started the newsroom.
Yeah.
Allison Phil and I actually were both in that play together with Edie. And we both got the call that we had been cast in the newsroom on the same night.
Oh, wow.
Which was really cool. But yeah, so I've known Edie, and frankly, like when that happened, we, you know, they gave us the dates of when we had to go shoot the newsroom pilot. And we told the producers of the play, and they were like, oh, well, then we're closing early because we're not going to try to replace both of them.
Wow.
So we actually ended up sort of accidentally putting a bullet in that in that show. But you know what? Edie is incredibly gracious and has forgiven me that many times over, and I appreciate that. But yeah, I worked with her before, man, and she's awesome. She's about the best kind of person you want to work with. She's the most, you know, down to earth, fun, funny, relaxed, but hardworking, dedicated, kind and generous, you know, not just as a, as an actor, but as a person, you know, the crew all, you know, would take a bullet for her. And so would the cast, you know, she's just the best kind of leader and really lucky to be in her orbit again. You know, we have a lot of fun working together on set, and, it's a hell of a fun show, man. It's a great group. We got a really good cast, and we have a lot of fun with what it is. You know, it is sort of a Law and Order meets the West Wing kind of feel to it.
Yeah,
Ignacio, who wrote.
Yeah, I tell people if they like Blue Bloods, this is a great, like, you know, you could sit down and watch Tommy and Blue Bloods in the same night, and you'll get your fill of you know, police action. You get your fill of Law and Order type action. You know, the thing about Edie that I love is, and I read in an interview somewhere, and I totally believe her. She's someone you totally believe. Some actors say this, and then they do something like, dude, where's my car? And you don't believe it. But Edie Falco says, you know, she doesn't do a thing, a project, unless she's in love with the script. And she's got to be, like, in love with it. So I tell people, you know, like, if Edie's backing Tommy and starring in Tommy, it's not for the money. She loves it. So to give it a shot. Is that how it is with you as well? Do you just have to love something? I mean, I know for me, especially the last few years, I really like to focus my writing on female-driven stuff as well, because I feel we really need to support I feel we really need to support our actresses and our female directors, and everything right now needs to kind of be evened out a bit. But for you, what led you to Tommy? What brought you to this role?
Well, first of all, let me say I completely agree that there's got to be a lot more parity in terms of our industry right now. I mean, you know, we see it constantly, and I'm not a big I'm not a big believer in award shows as a litmus test for quality.
Yeah.
But I think that they are a litmus test for where we are as an industry, and the fact that this industry claims to be continuing to make progress, and yet, you know, there's rarely more than one female director working on Broadway, and almost no female directors nominated for awards, that's just a problem. And I say that with a great deal of experience, having worked with some unbelievably talented female directors who deserve and are capable of producing exquisite work that that needs to be seen and recognized. So yes, I agree wholeheartedly. Now, in terms of, like, how do I pick projects? You know, I finally have reached a point in my career where I do feel safe sort of saying, like, I'm not going to jump at something unless I really believe in it. There was definitely a long stretch of my career, you know, like you said, I was a theater actor for the vast majority of my 20 years that I've been doing this. And that doesn't really pay the bills, you know? So there was definitely a long stretch of time where I was just, like, catching as catch can. I finally have gotten to a point in my career where, you know, with my family, and the other places where I put my energy, I don't, you know, I sort of feel like life is too short at this point to really not be focused, you know, to not have work be a place of inspiration and joy. And I'm definitely not looking to take projects just for the sake of taking projects. I'd rather be at home hanging out with my family than go into work every day on a job that I am uninspired by.
Yeah.
Now that is an incredible luxury, and I recognize that as being an incredible luxury, and I don't take that for granted. But I busted my ass to get to a place where I could make that decision. And, you know, who knows how long I'll be in that position. I want to make hay while the sun shines, you know.
And it also says something, though. So people don't judge you. You totally brought up the privilege of it, which is fantastic. But then it's also, there's another side of that coin, which is we talked about with Edie Falco. It also is kind of a stamp of approval for the projects you do as well. So people know this isn't something that was led because they put a check in front of me. I really believe in Tommy. I really believe in this show. I believe in Edie. So I hope people see this, that side of it, which is when, like, I talked to Ty Ma the other day, and Ty's a great, great actor. And he was kind of in the same boat as you, where he did Broadway for a long time, but it doesn't pay the bills. Then he pays some bills, but it's not like TV and film. Then he did a bunch of movies, and, right, and now he's able to do stuff like The Farewell, and he's able to have rules for what he's going to do and not going to do. And you guys bust your ass to get there, and I hope people recognize that.
Yeah, I mean, I come from a really wonderful working class family, both my wife and I do. We come from very blue collar folks. And so, you know, working hard is not something that is foreign to either one of us. In fact, it's something that we take a lot of pride in, that, you know, we show up and we work. You know, that said, like, there, you know, I spent a decade and a half of my, you know, 20s and into my early 30s, mid 30s, you know, being a stage actor with the occasional, like, you know, stint on a TV show, you know, the occasional guest star on a Law and Order or something like that, that, you know, I was living hand to mouth. You know, I was eating, you know, top ramen and, you know, eating off the dollar menu at McDonald's, like many people in this society, you know, and like, that's not to say that I see that as any sort of great sacrifice. I recognize that as just being life. That was my life for a long time. I have gotten to a place now where I don't have to do that. And I can go back to being very picky about the stuff that I want to put my stamp of approval on, where I'm choosing to spend my time. And, you know, when it came to Tommy, they sent me this script and said, look, Edie asked for you, please read this. Paul Attanasio, who wrote Donnie Brasco and Quiz Show, is the, you know, creator on this. And one of your oldest best friends, Michael Chernus, is going to be starring in it as well. And, you know, I mean, by the time they'd gotten done with that sentence, I was pretty much sure that I was going to sign on. But, you know, I wanted to at least give it a read. I took a look at it. I had a phone call with Paul for, you know, an hour, hour and a half, just talking character, you know, what, who they were looking for, what they wanted this guy to be, how I thought I could, you know, shake it up a little bit and see if we could find like a middle ground creatively, see what they were interested, if they were interested in working with me or what exactly they were looking for. We came to an almost immediate sort of artistic meeting of the minds on it. And I was like, I'm in, you know, and, not for even a split second have I looked back. It far exceeded all of my expectations in terms of how much fun it was to be on that set.
I was going to say you could be leading on a show or in indie films when you get a script like this where you're not the lead and Edie's the lead. What drives you to do it? What drives you to keep turning the page when your character's not on it?
Well, I look and see where I fit into the crux of the story. Mm-hmm. I look and see, is this a character that I'm interested in inhabiting? But also, is this a story overall that I want to be a part of telling? And, you know, that's the sort of immediate artistic questions for me. And then there come like the very practical questions of like, how much time am I going to have to dedicate of my life away from my family to be a part of this? And you know, what is this going to mean in terms of like my ability to take other work, you know, and that sort of stuff. And for me, as long as I'm feeling inspired when I'm on set, as long as I'm feeling like, you know, my artistic process or my artistic vision or my opinion, artistic opinion is being respected, understood, and valued, and, you know, at least taken into account, that goes a long, long way for me. And, you know, I there are going to be other opportunities for me to take those leading roles.
Of course.
To do the stuff that comes up. Right now I have a young daughter, and I want to, you know, these moments of life and her early years are, you know, days I can't ever get back. So being around to be home, you know, for her, but also making sure that I have the ability to, also participate in my home life, so that Amanda can go off and shoot movies and do the stuff that she needs to do in order to be creatively, artistically, and professionally fulfilled. Like, that's a very, very important factor for me. And this just ticked all the boxes, you know, and I was super happy to jump on board.
Yeah. But you are someone who at some point in time, you're going to go do Broadway again, correct?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't feel like you're someone that could stay away.
Theater, yeah.
You're going to direct. Oh wow, yeah. In L.A. or in New York?
Yeah. I'm supposed to direct a play in New York that was going to start rehearsal on May 4th.
Oh my God,
has been postponed indefinitely because of the closing of the theaters. But we will dive in and do that sometime in the next, I don't know, whenever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have no intentions of staying away from the theater. It's where I'm the most at home.
Tell me about this play you want to direct.
Can't wait.
Tell me about this play you're going to direct. Is it off Broadway? Broadway? What are we talking?
So it's going to be at MCC, which is sort of one of the preeminent off Broadway theaters in New York City, and their brand new multi-million-dollar space up in Midtown Manhattan. To play a play called Perry Street by a tremendous playwright named Lucy Thurber, who I have collaborated with for almost two decades now.
Wow.
And it's all about, you know, artists and benefactors, hunger, both literal and figurative, what and who you're willing to sacrifice in order to get what you most desire, and class in America. And you know, it's a really sort of wonderfully, powerfully absurd, but very human and moving play. And I can't wait to jump on board and really dig in with it when we get the opportunity, which we will. You know, this will pass and we'll get back to it.
Absolutely. You know what I was thinking about when I was thinking of you today too was when you were on the Newsroom. Social media was a thing then. I feel like if the Newsroom was on now, it would be even crazier than it was a few years ago. Social media has really taken a hold of like how the rest of the world looks at things and shapes things and makes their business decisions. And it's just getting crazy. Was it crazy even back then, though, when you were on the Newsroom? Because I remember every week there was some kind of controversy or people complaining about something. What was it like being on the Newsroom and being on that topical of a show?
I mean, you know, if you don't want to be in the middle of controversy, if you don't have any interest, you know, if you don't have thick enough skin to be in the midst of something that people are going to have very, you know, specific opinions about, and there's going to be a lot of pearl clutching and a lot of editorials and a lot of sort of, you know, kind of slanderous and sometimes libelous, you know, opinion pieces or whatever about, then, you know, you really shouldn't be an artist.
Yeah.
There are plenty of places to go where, you know, I want to be where opinions are, you know, that means that people are being challenged. If people are having that strong of a reaction to things, it means that there's something in there that they're not, that they're responding to, that they're not happy about. And, you know, I've worked throughout the course of my career with any number of great artists who have been willing to push buttons on any number of levels. And I'm very happy to be in their company and very happy to be part of that, because it's not interesting to me.
Yeah.
I recognize the value of entertainment for entertainment's sake. And I think that there are definitely times and places for it. I think right now is a really great you know, time for just entertainment for entertainment's sake. Just sit back, enjoy yourself, and turn off your brain for a little while. Awesome.
Yeah.
You know, for a long time, that hasn't necessarily been the case. And, you know, to be able to be on a show that pisses people off, or to be part of a, you know, I've spent my career working with Susan Laurie Parks and Neil LaBute and Aaron Sorkin and, you know, all sorts of people who go out there with the intention of rattling cages, because that's what needs to be done in order to get people to sort of look honestly at what's happening around them. And that to me is exciting. That to me is fun. I have a thick skin about it. You know, sometimes it can get a little intense, and sometimes, you know, you definitely, you hate feeling misunderstood. And you just sort of wish you could sit down with each and every one of these people and sort of take the time to explain in the ways that you know from being there behind the scenes, and that this is how it actually all plays out. But at the same time, you also have to recognize that there's a significant portion of the population that actually just are complaining for the sake of having their voices heard, because, I mean, that's what social media is for. It's to help everybody feel like our voice matters, that it can be heard, that we can be, that we can't. And in a world this big with this many people, and that is this spread out while simultaneously being this interconnected, I think that we are lonelier now than we ever have been before as a people, as a human people, and I think that this is where social media sort of shows up for all the best and worst reasons.
Good and bad.
I don't mind honest criticism. I'm more than happy to sit down with an honest critic and go toe to toe with them. I'm more than happy to learn and to admit when I am wrong, and to learn where I'm wrong, to learn where my blind spots are. Like, sure. I want to sit and have those conversations. It does nothing but help me grow as an artist.
Yeah, amen.
But the operative word and the important word there is, like, honest critic. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And, like, they have to be willing to also meet me halfway. I don't want to sit down with a zealot. I don't want to sit down with an ideologue, somebody who is incapable of acknowledging that they in fact may be wrong or seeing things in a way that isn't necessarily the most helpful or truthful. So, you know, if and when those people do present themselves that can have that honest conversation with me, I'm right there. Let's do it. Let's talk.
I mean, an example example I give my listeners is when my first film, there were two critics that hated it. One of them I sat down and talked with for 3 hours about it, and he goes, you know, we basically agreed to disagree. However, he's like, this was a great conversation. The other one, who is Richard Roper, and I've talked about this before, definitely there was some sort of grudge from years past, and it was a personal thing. And so I know what you're talking about when you say honest critics, and like people that want to respect you and just say, hey, here's why I didn't like it. Here's why I think it should be something different or whatever. You just want to be respected. That's what it is.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I want to sit with people and say, hey, dude, here's your blind spot. This is what you're not understanding, because you're coming at this from your point of view, and you haven't taken into consideration this point of view. Awesome.
Yep.
Like, that is thrilling to me. As long as that person is also willing to acknowledge that they may not understand the entirety of the intricacies of my point of view. And that doesn't make me a mansplainer. Doesn't make me a, you know, whatever. It's literally just me having my opinion and my experience, you know, and like, that stuff is invaluable. That's how we grow, you know, not only as artists, but I think that critics can grow as critics. And like that, those conversations are thrilling, and that's why you get into art, you know, because you want to have those conversations. I don't want everything that I do to be adored.
No.
How boring and pointless, you know what I mean? Like, that's not, then I haven't done it right. If everything that I do, everyone is clapping me on the back and saying, oh man, absolutely right on, you know, then there are big, big, big problems in what I'm doing. I'm pandering, you know, and I don't ever want to be sort of caught doing that if I can avoid it.
I mean, I love the interchange, the exchange between the artist and the critic, and even artists and artists. I think that's why I do this show. Yeah. And the other reason I do this show, and it's a question I had for you, and then I want to talk a little bit about Neil LaBute and because we had Neil on the show. Actually, we should talk about Neil first because it goes with this conversation. We had Neil on the show, and I'm a huge fan of Neil's, and you got nominated for his show, and that's where you met your wife, I think, mm-hmm. if I have that story correct.
Yep.
And
one of the other plays that I did of Neil's. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I tell people all the time, because when I had him on, people were like, I had a couple women that came after me, and they were like, how could you have Neil LaBute on your show? And I'm like, you have to understand, he's one of the sweetest guys I've ever interviewed, first of all. Second of all, he's highly intelligent. Third of all, the characters he writes and the situations he writes about are not him. He's telling stories. You know, I feel like that sometimes gets lost in everything. You can't be controversial and still be a good person. It's almost like your art has to represent you to some people nowadays.
Well, this is, I think this is an actually incredibly valuable topic to talk about. I'll start with the sort of the macro idea and then get a little bit more specific.
Sure.
At the risk of sort of getting long-winded about it, but hopefully to engage people in this discussion on a bigger level. I think one of the primary difficulties that we run into as artists right now, and particularly in this day and age, is that everyone assumes, because of the sort of voyeuristic and nature of reality television,
yeah.
And everything that we, you know, plays such a huge part in our entertainment as a society right now. Everybody assumes that art on some level is biographical or is autobiographical or is, documentarian. And there is very little room or space right now being made for artists who are willing to hold up a mirror to society as it exists and, through their own lens, but without their own experience. And the way that I think this sort of specifically relates to Neil, is that people go, oh, how can you have this guy? He celebrates all of these horrible things about the worst of the worst, and he must be this horrible person because who can write that clearly unless they are that? Mm-hmm. And my sort of understanding of it, having worked with Neil for a very long time now and knowing him and his family, and I can say pretty unequivocally, Neil is none of those things that he writes.
Right.
People sort of assume that Neil is one of these men that he writes, these archetypal sort of Labutian characters that he writes, these awful men, you know. But I think the reality is Neil isn't that guy in the classroom who's doing that horrible shit. Neil is actually the kid in the back of class who's very quiet,
mm-hmm.
who's sitting and watching and just has a shockingly good a shockingly brilliant ability to mimic and reflect what he sees.
Yep.
In terms of that kind of person, Neil's been holding up the mirror to the worst of what is considered that patriarchal male thing for a long time. I mean, almost from jump in his work. And people have sort of assumed that he celebrates it, but there's nothing celebratory about Neil's work. I mean, if you're walking out of Neil's work disturbed by what you've just seen, then Neil has accomplished what he wanted to accomplish. If you're walking out of Neil's work sort of, saying like, right on, then on some level, Neil has also accomplished what he wants to accomplish, because the people who are around you should be able to see that. And that should answer some questions about, for them, about who you are. Now, you know, over the years, Neil, obviously his work changes and grows and hits in many different places, but there is this sort of archetypal male character that does return and return and return. And that's not because that is the world as Neil sees it through his own lens, meaning that's not his personal opinion. That is the world as Neil sees it because that's the world as it is.
Yeah.
Like these people do in fact exist. They make up a shocking percentage of our government.
Absolutely.
You know, both on the federal, the state, the local levels, they make up a shocking percentage of the people in power in industry and art and all these various different places. He reflects it back because it's there.
Yep.
He's not creating something out of nowhere and bathing in it. He's holding it up and it's reflecting back because that's what it is. I say the same thing about Susan Laurie Parks. You know, Susan writes these incredibly complex pieces of theater that challenge her audience on any number of levels. The most sort of intense of which is it requires you to cease judging every single one of her characters. And she write some pretty gnarly characters. I just did a play of hers a couple of years back called White Noise, in which I played a guy who starts out as sort of, you know, a vice, you know, kind of hipster Williamsburg kind of dude, vice reading hipster Williamsburg kind of guy. And in just a few short months, becomes something resembling a white nationalist. Mm. Now, Susan Laurie asks you from judging this character because she doesn't judge this character. She understands why he becomes all the things that he becomes and where the fears are and where the hurt is, and she feels for him. But if you turn that part of yourself off and you sit in judgment, you miss a quarter of her play, at least.
Yeah.
And you miss a huge chunk of her message, and you miss a huge chunk of how you get to grow from art and relate to the people around you. And Neil does the same thing. Now, that's not to say that any art is above criticism, by all means. Like I said, like, let's sit down and have honest conversations with honest critics. And, you know, I think there are probably some really great arguments to be made about perpetuating certain voices in entertainment and in the theater. But I would say, as long as there are Harvey Weinsteins, and let's be very, very clear, there are a hell of a lot more than just one who is currently rotting in jail. There are a lot more out there. As long as those men exist, work like Neil's is actually important because it ferrets them out.
Thank
holds
you.
Holds up the mirror and says, these be aware.
Yes,
that
thank
this
you.
Is still happening.
I don't have and to make my point now. Sign. I don't have to make my point now. You just did it. Yes. I like to tell people, look at the president. He's a Labudian type character. I like to tell people in the conversations I have, isn't it possible that Neil is just spotlighting something that's going on in the world that he wants you to be aware of? And hopefully maybe we can change that behavior. Isn't that possible? And I don't know. Look, I'm not saying Neil LaBute did this on purpose. I'm not saying it was the thing that changed the world. But maybe we wouldn't be so aware of misogyny and the types of terrible male behavior out there if you're a theater person and you didn't go see Neil LaBute's plays or you haven't seen his films. There's a possibility in my mind that he has taught people some things about correct behavior and inappropriate behavior. That's my feeling on it.
I think that there's no doubt that anyone who comes to, you know, any piece of art with the ability to be challenged and understand that they don't know everything and that there is something for them there to learn and to see grows as a result of it.
Absolutely.
I've been to Lord knows any number of different pieces of theater or seen, you know, musicians or gone to art galleries, museums, and seen pieces of art that I go that I do not respond to. And one of the things that I have to start asking is why? Why am I not responding to this? What is it about me? You know, what is it about me that is rejecting this art? Art by itself is not something that is to be rejected. it's something to be, you know, it's something to be viewed. It's something to be taken in. It's something to be experienced. You know, it, look, the reality is that the reason that we have progressed any distance that we have progressed at all in the last few years in terms of the Me Too movement and the Time's Up movement is because a group of extraordinary women with an extraordinary amount of courage stood up and said no more. And our voices deserve to be heard, and we're going to be heard too. And they deserve absolutely all the credit. And there are a number of people who have sat in the theater and watched Neil's work, or have sat in movies and watched Neil's work, who have had their skin crawl and have said, oh, Jesus, I don't want to be that. And have recognized parts of themselves in some of those archetypal Lovunian characters and have said, I think that that part needs to go away or needs to be put down or needs to be grown out of. And, you know, to the individual, that has been a great gift. And to those people who have been willing to change because of it, then the art has served its purpose.
What's the best way to get involved, start acting, if you will, in the theater? I have a lot of people that ask me this in Chicago, and they're like, how they're TV actors or they're film actors. I've done some films they want to know, how do they step into the theater world? It seems to be a close community, and, you know, people know each other. How do you get involved with theater?
For me, it was the place I wanted to start. It was the only thing that was really interesting to me when I first started working. So it was the first place that I went. I was young. I was right out of school. I went to school for theater. As soon as I got out of school, I went and found my generation, my community of artists, by finding, you know, where developmental theater was being done. New Dramatists in New York, The Lark in New York, Rattlestick in New York. There are, you know, Manhattan Theater Company used to do a lot of developmental work. The Women's Project, MCC, you know, Second Stage was doing a lot of developmental work and still is. You know, the public, like they're extraordinary institutions that are doing, they're helping those stories, the next stories that are coming up, be told. And I just threw myself on the mercy of those institutions and said, like, I'm happy to, you don't have to pay me. You know, if you want to pay me in a Metro card or a Twix bar or, you know, free lunch or whatever it is, like, I will be here for a day in this church basement or whatever it is, doing a reading of this play with these directors and this playwright and this cast, and tearing this thing apart and learning and being present for my, you know, for my community as we grow. And, you know, part of throwing yourself in that early on is that your community does grow. And group of kids that started out in our late teens and early 20s are now in our mid 40s. And, you know, the directors that I used to work with who were the first times out, they now run Lincoln Center, you know. A lot of people, a lot of the playwrights that I worked with, you know, this was their first thing out of school. You know, here's a reading of a show I'm going to do, and let's do this. Well, they're now writing television series and are showrunners and, Pulitzer winners and, you know, all sorts of crazy stuff. You grow with the time, you know, you become part of your community. Now, if you have, you know, an established career and in film and television and you want to get into the theater, you know, I think that there are definitely ways to do it. My gut on it is to say, like, do what we all did at the beginning. It may require a little bit of an ego check, and it may require you to sort of say, like, you know, yeah, I have an established career. I have X number of social media followers, or I have, you know, this name recognition or this cachet. But I am, in fact, willing to go down into this anonymous basement and do these readings and workshops with people who don't have much of a voice yet, But who will, you know? There are always young writers who are writing for great actors of any age. I mean, I will tell you that we just lost a really great actor named Mark Blum, who passed away from complications of COVID. And Mark was one of those guys that I knew right from the very get-go in my career, because he was one of those dudes that was showing up at these readings. And Mark was on Saying Elsewhere. Mark was, you know, the love interest to Madonna and Desperately Seeking Susan. Like, Mark had a career. He had a career, you know what I mean? And he didn't need to be coming down to these basements and doing this stuff, but he did because he loved it. And it was important to him. I also look at like Dylan Baker, who had never stopped doing that.
Yeah, you know, he's amazing.
Great, tremendous. Terry Kinney, you know, this all of the Steppenwolf guys, like none of them have ever stopped doing this stuff because it's just, it's part of their DNA.
It's who they are.
And you got to check your, man. And if you want to be part of that world, it's got to be who you are too.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of being in the theater is like, checking everything else at the door and showing up and you know, throwing yourself entirely into this community that is going to pay you nothing. It's going to pay you nothing except in terms of the fulfillment that comes from being, you know, in the crucible of creation. And that is enough joy for most people. And, you know, if you want to get back into it, if it's something that you never had a chance to get into and you want to get into, that's sort of my suggestion, is go do it. You know, make yourself available to it and don't hesitate to show up where you're asked to go.
Well, I wanted to say it to everybody. Tommy is on Thursdays, 9 p.m. here in Chicago. And you can follow Thomas Sadowski on Twitter at his name, at Thomas Sadowski. You can get more information about Inara.org there. Also, his Instagram is Thomas_Sadowski. I wanted to bring up your Inara again because during our interview, I got a message from my friend that someone we know has their father has passed away from COVID. He was 51 or 52 years old. They couldn't say goodbye to him. Family couldn't say goodbye to him. And he had no underlying conditions. This is a very serious thing. This is a very crazy time. That sucks. Inara is going
really
to help
sorry,
these kids. It's going to help these families get soap, get food, get the things they need so they don't have to go out and try to get it themselves and so they can try to avoid getting sick. We need to help each other right now. And I tell people this on Facebook and Instagram all the time. If you need anything, please reach out to me. I don't have the money, but I can try to help you get things. If I see something at the store that you need, let me know. I can try to help you guys out any way we can. If you just need someone to talk to during your self-isolation, you're bored, please check in on our friends who suffer from alcoholism, from addictions of all kind. Please check in on them. Please check in on everybody during this time. But please check out Inara.org. And sorry to end on a bummer of a note, Thomas. But I just want people to know how serious this is and that we need to be good human beings right now and help each other out.
Well, I tell you what, man, that I don't see that as ending on a bummer of a note. This is the reality of our situation as it exists right now. Right now, it is like this. And it will pass, but it will not pass without a lot of hearts being broken before that happens. And that is the reality of the life that we live. That's the contract that you sign when you're born into this world, that you will get old, you will get sick, and everything that you come into contact will contact with will eventually get old, will break, and will pass away. And that is life. And the more we deny the reality of that, the harder we're going to suffer, the more rope burns we're going to get. So, you know, we can, in this time of darkness, The last teaching that the Buddha gave before he went on to the whatever the next incarnation was, or whatever happened, I don't know, I'll pretend to know, but I know that his last teaching was be a light unto yourself. And if you can carry the warmth of compassion and the warmth of dignity and the warmth of kindness in your heart and light up your own heart, you will, without even recognizing that you're doing it, light the path for other people. And that is the greatest thing that we can offer to each other. And I don't see that as ending on a bummer note. I see that as a call to action and to inspiration. We can do right now. We can help. It's going to require sacrifice, and that's okay. Uncomfortability passes, and we will get through it. And we will get through it by lightening the load on each other.
Well, I want to thank you, and I want to thank everyone else out there listening that gives a damn and is. We're going to get through it. Just keep talking to everybody. Keep people, you know, sane during this time, and make sure everyone has the essentials. So please tune in to Tommy on CBS on Thursdays. Thomas Sadowski, thank you so much, man. It was an absolute pleasure to talk to you. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it, and take care out there.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, thank you so much to Thomas Sadowski for sitting down and having such a... man, that one was an emotional interview, man. That was... Whew. What a brain on that guy. What a smart artist. Fuck. All right. At Matt Aaron Show on Twitter, The Matthew Aaron Show on Facebook, www.thematthewaaronshow.com. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify, Stitcher, all kinds of things. But Spotify is the place where it's happening the most. And, Tommy's on CBS on Thursdays, 9 p.m. in Chicago here. Thomas Sadowski, please go back, watch The Newsroom, watch this man do his work. Incredible actor. Thank you, Thomas, and we will see you on our next show. Please keep self-isolating, keep in your quarantine, be strong, people. Talk to you later.